chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees. Chicken in the pots, the Mottawog, the Petaloomies. Out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20 and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, smart talk about a food, a wine, and farming in Sonoma County and beyond. Yes, it's a bit of a new moniker. There'll be some other new things here on Mouthful in the next few weeks as we approach our 20th year on the air. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. Hope you've had a great weekend. Glorious farmers markets today. Just beautiful. Excuse me while I tell Lark to be quiet. You need to be quiet, little girl. She hasn't voiced her opinion here on Mouthful for a while, but she seems a little wordy today. Waiting for favas, there weren't any favas, and suddenly there are so many favas at the market. So spring is here. I saw the first cucumbers, the first English peas, the first sugar snap peas. So the season is in swing, and you know, if you don't do anything else all week for yourself, just go to at least one farmer's market. It's my version of church. Tonight we're talking about a controversial topic, one I understand only a little bit, and I hope by the end of this hour I understand more and that you do too. We're taking on the issue of fluoride in our water. I remember when my daughters were really tiny, I was supposed to give them fluoride drops every morning. And, oh, was that a bad thing? Was that a good thing? Anyway, we're going to see what we can do. And I know that coming up in early May, the Board of Supervisors of Sonoma County is going to be voting on the fluoridation of Sonoma County water supply. So that's why we are doing this now. And on that note, I want to introduce three of our guests. We have Scott Goyne of Hen House Brewing Company. Is that, did I get the name right?
Yes.
Awesome. Okay. We have Michael Giroux. Is that right?
Not even close.
Oh, nice, pronounce
try.
It for me.
Gurkhout.
Gurkhout. Oh, I've spelled it wrong. Okay. Gurkhout of Alvarado Street Bakery.
Yes.
And then we have our evening's expert, Donna Gallagher Stroh.
Yes.
Okay,
that's right.
Great. Of Clean Water Sonoma Marin.
Yes.
So, and all of you have some sort of interest, vested interest in what happens with our water supply, something that we all have a vested interest in, whether we think about it or not. So, first of all, Don, I'd like you to frame the issue. What's going on?
Yeah, let me get you up to speed. About 2.5 years ago, the county hired a new public health director, and she came blazing in saying one of the top things she wanted to do was fluoridate the county. And we went to work. She resigned last year, not December, about a year and a half ago in December. So we just got a new one again, and her name is Dr. Karen Millman, and she has picked up where she left off, and so we've had to go to work really hard. How I met the two gentlemen that are here with me is we've been meeting with city council people and board of supervisors and trying to get the cities to weigh in, because it is the vote of five people, the board of supervisors, that will fluoridate the entire county. We're currently not fluoridated. I was surprised to find a lot of people along the road that thought we were fluoridated. We haven't ever been fluoridated here. Healdsburg, however, has been fluoridated for 63 years. So that's probably why they got mixed up and thought we had been fluoridated. So in meeting with the supervisors, they said, we want to know what businesses don't want fluoridation. So we, our nonprofit, went to work asking businesses what they thought. And surprisingly, we haven't found one yet that wants it. The two gentlemen you have here are very nice to come on the show with me. This is very great.
Great. And I think we need to back up just a little tiny bit, because I think if you ask the average person, hey, what's fluoride?
Right.
I don't know how many people can actually answer that question.
You're right. It is weird because, like, I have a prop here. Of course, the listeners can't see it, but I have a mouthwash. It's a fluoridated mouthwash, and it says drug facts on the top, and then a little bit further down it says do not swallow. So, see, the thing is, what people don't realize is that the FDA has never approved fluoride for ingestion. Never.
Not really?
The tablets have been pulled off. They can't even be taken by prescription anymore either. So
those drops that I had to get my little girl,
those are off. They've gone so far as that is now done, because it is an unregulated drug, fluoride is. Now, here's why people are so confused. What they actually put in the water isn't fluoride that's in the toothpaste. It's a hydrofluorosilicic acid. It's a waste product from the Alcoa, Reynolds, and phosphate fertilizer industries.
I knew there was going to be a waste product in there.
Well, see, it's you know, at first when I first started telling people that, they look at me like I have, you know, have a third eye, except for that we have books, and you can get the information yourself and find out. I've called the company Mosaic, Univar, and Solvay. Those are the three companies. Some of it's from China, and some of it's from Texas, and some of it's from Florida. But those are the three companies. I've called them myself. It is a waste byproduct of the phosphate, fertilizer, and aluminum industries. That's what it is. And they're getting rid of it and saving a lot of money, because it is, by the EPA standards, called a toxin.
You know, that's interesting, because a number of things that have gone mainstream, one of them, soy. And the way soy began being used in tofu and those sorts of things, it was a byproduct of the soy oil industry in the late 60s, and they were trying to position it as a la-ti-da food. They failed, and they got it into they brought it mainstream by going through the health food market. And we could talk all night just about that sort of thing. So, but going back even a little bit further, what is, fluoride is fluorine plus other compounds.
Right. So I have a degree in biology, and fluorine is the most reactive halogen on the periodic table. It's calciumphilic, which loves to bind to calcium, and that's where it's found in the Earth's core. See, calcium fluoride is what's in the rock that they break up to use 70 so years ago when they used fluoride to make the atomic bomb. It reacts with uranium and plutonium to make it blow up. So that can't really be good to drink right then and there if you know the origin of the use of fluoride. They had to get rid of it somehow because a lot of damage was done, and so they made it a good thing. They got dentists and entire wings of dental schools bought for to say it works on your teeth.
Now, is that because it bonds with calcium? Yeah. Is that because it bonds with calcium?
Yeah. So if you drink it, then it binds with the calcium, you know, binds with your teeth as they're erupting. And for many years, they made everyone believe, oh, it's just going to leave a couple spots on your teeth. Well, how could something go into your bloodstream and only affect one organ system. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. It affects every organ system in a person. And if you're of color or Hispanic or weak or poor or elderly, it affects you even more. So yes, this particular chemical doesn't, like if you're healthy like me, I'm a nutritionist, it wouldn't affect me as much, although it would still affect me. It would just not be as noticeable as it was with a sicker or poorer person, which is really kind of criminal because the public health department in Sonoma County actually uses poor people in this county to push the fluoride. That's why we want to fluoridate, is to help the poor people, and it actually is harder on them. Pushing them more towards diabetes.
Now, what's the negative impact? What are these negative functions that fluoride does in the body?
The thing that's going to affect our two business persons that are here might be helpful is fluoride is an enzymatic inhibitor. Mm-hmm. If it's an enzymatic inhibitor, it messes with your metabolism.
Okay.
Therefore, if it messes with your metabolism, it'll mess with your thyroid.
Right.
That's an endocrine system. It's an endocrine disruptor.
So does it disrupt thyroid function?
Yes, it does.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Books have been written about that.
Oh, because, you know, there's this enormous increase in thyroid cancer.
Yes.
My daughter and my daughter and my niece, girls raised, you know, sort of by semi-hippie, you know what I mean, by counterculture parents in Sonoma County, both had thyroid cancer when they were young women. And I have met so many people, and they're used to, the only risk factor used to be that you had a parent who worked at a nuclear power plant, or you did.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that about fluoride.
Yes.
That's interesting.
In Europe, actually, in the 50s and 60s, fluoride was used for hyperthyroid persons to lower their thyroid. So it's been actually used as a drug to do that very same thing, which is partly the reason why the rest of the world doesn't fluoridate. So, I mean, there's a few places still left, but we fluoridate in this country more than the rest of the world combined.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I went online just before coming, and I did two searches. I did, what is fluoride? And then I did the search on, is fluoride safe? Not to get the answer, but to see where I went.
Right.
And it was just this website with all these questions that you would have thought it was like, you know, manna from heaven.
Yeah.
And it was, is fluoride safe? Conclusion, is fluoride safe? Of course it's safe. I mean, that was the tone of the whole thing.
Well, I'm not going to put down men, but our government's sort of like men. They hate to admit they're wrong when they're wrong.
Oh, that part.
I'm teasing my guys here.
That's science right there.
That's science right there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's bring go ahead.
What has happened is the government does know they were wrong by this this public health policy. The CDC in 1999 has already said a long time ago it only works topically. There's just nobody pulling this thing off. The FDA is not in charge of regulating it, and the EPA has said it's a toxin. So what we don't have is our senators and our congresspeople holding hearings and actually stopping fluoridation in this country. That's what actually needs to happen.
Yeah.
So we would be very behind in this county to follow along like lemmings with something that's getting backed off everywhere. Santa Barbara just quit fluoridating, and they're huge. They just stopped. They said, this is stupid. And Sacramento's about to do it too. So people are coming down off of the fluoride. Mm-hmm. This is not a good time to put it in. And you know what? The safe thing you just brought up, the dental industry keeps telling us safe and effective, safe and cost effective, safe and effective. For something to be cost effective or safe and effective, it has to first be effective. The largest study by the World Health Organization says that the tooth decay rates are no different around the world than in the places that are fluoridated. The NIDA, the National Institute of Dental Researchers in this country in 1988 and 89, our government paid $4 million to study 39,206 people, children, in 84 cities, half unfluoridated, half fluoridated, no statistically significant difference in tooth decay. Our own government. And they did that study to prove that it was working. But the study showed that it didn't work. A large scientific study is over 600 people. That is the largest study. Now, it isn't effective. And it's not safe. The stuff that they put in the water, there's not one evidence-based clinical study for safety on ingestion for humans.
Wow.
Not now, one.
Tell me if I'm wrong on this perception. It seems to me that when this discussion, when there's a public discussion, and I don't mean like what we're having here,
right,
but what you see in news, in, you know, general news coverage, people who are anti-fluoride seem to be being linked with people who are anti-vaccination and that sort of thing. Do you see that going on?
Well, here's the thing that the pro-fluoridation would like to do mm-hmm. is confuse us with a lot of other things.
They
would like us to be a part of, I don't know, what is there, conspiracy theories?
Conspiracy theories, stuff being put in the air, vaccines, chemtrails,
right.
Conspiracy theories, 9/11 truthers, and anti-vaxxers.
Yeah. So Clean Water Sonoma Marin, from the very beginning, wanted to keep our scientific legitimacy. We have a lot of doctors and dentists. Mm-hmm. And people who are nutritionists help. We have a lot of health professionals in mm-hmm. our group, and we would prefer to stick with one topic that we're talking about. We're talking about keeping the fluoride out of the water, so we're not mixing it with anything else. And that's
right.
What's done is it's made it very difficult for our public health department here in Sonoma County to diss us. Mm-hmm. We're forced to be reckoned with now because we
right.
only come with the facts.
Uh-huh.
We don't even use anecdotal. They use anecdotal all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even do that.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows anecdotal. That's just my cousin had fluoride growing up, and he seems like he doesn't have any cavities. It's like, you know, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
We're scientists.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay, well, I want to bring our other guests into the discussion right now. So when you say that it's an enzymatic inhibitor, we've got two people who rely on the action of enzymes for baking, for brewing. So what is it? Talk a little bit about how this would impact what you do.
I did a little bit of research into this, and there doesn't seem to be any effect at the dosage that they are talking about entering into the water stream. I believe it's one part per million that they put in. But the concern is there have been cases where the machines have broken down and larger amounts have been put in the water. Mm-hmm. And really from a standpoint of being proud of where I'm from in mm-hmm. Sonoma County and having enjoying the clean water that we have. It's perfect brewing water. I don't understand the concept of adding this chemical into the water supply. Mm-hmm. There seems to be a lot more cost-effective things that we could be doing to address the dental issues that are out there, the dental problems.
Uh-huh.
Right, and the same is true for our company. Alvarado Street Bakery is an organic bakery. Mm-hmm. We've been making organic whole grain breads here in Sonoma County for 35 years. The clean water is part of what makes our bread so wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Although we started here in Sonoma County, we're now a nationally distributed and available all over the country and even internationally. And people are always asking us about the ingredients that go into our bread.
Now, how many facilities do you have? I mean, I assume you have more than just in Sonoma County.
No, we have one bakery.
Oh, okay.
It's in Petaluma. And it's a fairly large and automated facility, and we bake about 50,000 loaves a day of organic whole grain bread. Fluoride is not allowed in organic food production. And as a certified organic bakery, that's an ingredient that we could not use, just like GMOs. We cannot use GMOs
right.
in our facility because we are certified organic. The same is going to happen to us if we have to somehow treat or filter or buy water elsewhere to make those loaves of bread. Alvarado Street is a worker-owned cooperative,
mm-hmm.
so there's 120 families involved in the quality of the bread we make and the response we get from our consumers. And this would put a hardship on our company to have to find water that wasn't fluoridated
yeah.
or to treat water that was.
Uh-huh. And then we don't have a farmer with us right now, but what sort of impact would that have on, say, organic farms? Would they not be able to use the water?
One of the things that are being considered is, most people are disconnected with how their water is delivered in the first place. So this would be fluoridated at the top, the Sonoma County Water Agency, right at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Then it goes to your pipes. Most of it gets flushed or whatever. You know, it's only 1% of it gets actually drank. So
mm-hmm.
if you're trying to deliver a medicine, that's a really inefficient way to deliver a medicine.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't be putting medicine. You shouldn't be treating the people with medicine in the water. But what happens then is you flush your toilets and it goes to the Laguna Sewage Treatment Plant. We only have a tertiary treatment plant. It does not get flush out endocrine disruptors or
right.
fluoride. It's not capable of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have that water going out on the golf courses and actually going to some of the wineries. See, because we're running out of water. We're in a drought.
Right. Yeah.
We're having to use reclaimed water every way we can. I think that right there is how some of the agriculture may end up getting some of it. Most of the people we talk to in the wineries, they're, of course, on their own wells. But the thing is, if we start having to do some of our waste, our water management plans, that I'm on the groundwater management for the county, mm-hmm. one of the programs is we're going to re-inject wells that are not in use anymore to store below ground so it doesn't evaporate, mm-hmm. clean water during high times mm-hmm. when it's mm-hmm. raining and we have enough to divert it and store it. Mm-hmm. How are we going to take that fluoridated water and put it into our wells? Now it is going to get to everyone eventually. Yeah. Now it's going to go into our water table. We'll be doing our own fracking in a weird way, because actually the fracking chemical is not much different from the stuff they're putting in the water.
Really?
It has a few more things in it. It's a sister chemical.
Oh, God, that's so... Okay, that was a mouthful.
Well, it was a mouthful. Sorry.
It's okay.
But see,
I mean, this whole...
water goes everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, but
I
want
people
to just...
It's going to go everywhere.
Let that resonate for a few minutes while we take a little musical break with some Kate Wolf.
I'll take the back roads home through the open countryside, letting things slip by. Drawn out time, I'll take the long way home on the back roads of this life, taking time to see what goes by. Coming and going, there's no dividing line. What you're headed for, someone left behind, and the shortest road ain't always the best. Sometime let a back road take you home. A back road is so easy, it just rambles on and on. Take it or leave it, as it rolls along, drifts through things it cannot change and doesn't even try. Wouldn't that be something? You and I. Coming and going, there's no dividing line. What you're heading for, someone left behind, and the shortest road ain't always the best. Sometime let a back road take you home. In any place you're bound, well, you'll get there someday. You're the one who chooses what you see along the way. And when the heartaches seem too much for you to bear, there's a back road winding everywhere. Coming and going, there's no dividing line. What you're heading for, someone left behind, and the shortest road ain't always the best. Sometime let a back road take you home.
Okay, well, sometime she has such a beautiful voice. One of the things we're doing here on Mouthful for a while, until I decide to do something else, is I'm going to be featuring all local music for 19 and a half years, I've been entertaining myself with a variety of musical tie-ins, from Hot Pastrami and Every Day I Write the Book and all kinds of fun things. But I decided, with my constantly increasing focus on local, something I've been doing my whole life, decided that we're going to add that dimension to the music as well. So now we're going to just not so much leave behind the topic of fluoride, but we're going to hear from our guests about their particular businesses. Hen House Brewing, heard about you, and that's it. I haven't had your beers, don't know that much. I just know that you're doing it. So tell us about it.
Well, thank you. Hen House Brewing Company is three gentlemen, myself, Colin McDonald, and Shane Gopal. We became licensed in 2011. We had been brewing for a couple years before that, based in Petaluma. Just having a great time brewing beer and providing great beer around the Bay Area. We have over 250 accounts.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah, we're distributing the beer ourselves, keeping it cold, making sure that we take care of the beer all the way to the customer.
And is it in kegs or bottles?
We're currently draft only.
Draft only, okay. That's
yes.
what I thought. That's
we do not thought. Bottle. We do not have a tasting room yet. Uh-huh. But we're just focused on making great beer and sending it out around the county, and really been having a great time doing it. Okay. The brewing industry is really a fun thing to be in.
Uh-huh. What sort of beers are you making?
Our year-round beer is a Saison, so you can almost always find our Saison around. And then we rotate through a number of different styles. We like to focus on styles that we feel are underrepresented in the craft beer
scene. Okay, so tell us, would you describe Saison?
Saison is a farmhouse ale. Originally came from the Wallonia region between France and Belgium. Okay. And they call them farmhouse ales because back in the day, the farmhouses used to brew beer, and it would be a form of sustenance for the workers, mm-hmm. and really a form of compensation. Mm-hmm. And the farmhouses would develop these brewing styles so that they had had a form of compensation to keep the better beer you brewed, the better worker you would get. So really, it was a beer for the worker. Mm-hmm. The Saison style can be, it's a really wide range of what a Saison could be. Mm-hmm. So that's why I prefaced our house Saison is light, dry, peppery. We put a little bit of organic Sonoma County wheat in it, mm-hmm. and we put a little bit of black pepper and coriander.
Black pepper, right on.
The Saisons were commonly brewed with things other than hops to celebrate really abundance. Mm-hmm. So they were brewed with interesting grains and oftentimes spices and herbs. Mm-hmm. They can be malty or not malty, but typically they're yeast-forward beers. Mm-hmm. Some of them were sour, some of them were not.
So are you doing any sours?
We are doing sours.
I just discovered sour beers in the last year or so. It's the best thing that's happened to me in ages.
I love sour beers myself. I made kombucha for a number of years prior to starting the brewery. I used to make essential oils and the machines that extract essential oils and various products. But going back to sour beers, yes, we have a fun, small sour program, but we call it, it's an actual pyramid of barrels that we have in our warehouse, and it's our Saison, and it's most of them are on lactic, some are on Brett, some are on PDO, one of them has strawberries in it, and I'm really excited. I'm going to rack that down and put 40 or 50 pounds of local strawberries in it again.
Oh, interesting.
Double strawberry sour. Uh-huh. Yes.
Now, can you, I've had a blackberry sour, and you absolutely cannot taste blackberries. There's something there that tastes really nice, but it's not like, you know, blackberry Kool-Aid or anything.
Well, it depends on how you make the sour beer. Uh-huh. One of the exciting things for me with sour beers is that I feel when you do it right and you put the fruit in at the right time, the acids that that are created mostly from lactobacillus, but some of the other organisms create acids as well. But you can really capture the essence of fruit with a sour beer. Now, there's many different ways to make a sour beer, and if you're just using the fruit as a source of sugar early on, then the nuances of the fruit can disappear.
I guess, you know, and I might have been not said that exactly correctly. There's no sweet element in the blackberry sours I've had or any of the berry sours I've had. I was a little hesitant because I don't want anything sweet in my beer. But there was something almost... more of an aromatic quality, like when you're smelling blackberries rather than tasting them. It's really lovely. I'm a huge fan.
The aromatic compounds that are created in the sour program, Brettanomyces creates these amazing molecules. It's similar to winemaking, similar to essential oil extraction. These alcohols and esters combine, alcohols and acids combine to make esters, but they these aromatic compounds are created in the barrel. There's a reason why the wines are aged in barrels for a long time as well. But we, in the beer making, use these organisms, Lactobacillus, Pediococcus, Brettanomyces, and they create, over time, these really interesting flavor profiles. And then with the addition of fruit, the fruit can be added as a source of sugar or it can be added for flavor as well. Well, one interesting aspect about sours with regards to sweetness is some of these organisms like Brettanomyces, they will consume every sugar, not just the simple sugars, but they will even reach into the barrel and consume some of the wood sugars that are very undigestible. So it's really interesting, but they become dry as a bone.
Which is, that's my style. Yes. Now, in the in these sours, there's no hops. Is that right, or is there hops?
Some people are playing with hops. There's a sour beer movement, and you're starting to see dry hop sour beers. But typically, no. The Lactobacillus, one of the reasons why some of the beers have high levels of bitterness back in the day is that they were it's a form of preservative, and the acids in the bitter compounds inhibit Lactobacillus. So you don't want a real bitter beer if you're going to pitch lacto.
Right. Okay, that's interesting because... I think I'm allergic to hops, or maybe hops just affects me like it affects a lot of people, which is it makes you feel bloated and it makes you want to go to sleep, and sometimes it gives you a headache. So I just, I mean, I welcome these sour beers without hops because it's a nice, refreshing drink.
I'm very passionate about brewing beers that don't focus on hops. We brew an oyster stout that we put local oysters in, and I put a touch of sea salt that I harvest off of Mendocino Coast Island. So it, basically, it's a beer that's infused with our ocean, and so the flavor profile, and then that plays off the flavor profile of a dry Irish stout recipe.
Oysters?
So roasty, toasty. It's not fishy, but oysters, we put shells in the boil for the calcium carbonate, and that affects the mouthfeel. And then we put whole oysters at the end for that liquor, that brine that's within the oyster. So brine with a little bit of sea salt, and then with the roasty toastiness of a stout. And we didn't make up the style. It's an Old British Styles recipe. Stouts and oysters. Oysters used to be bar food. Back in the day, they were the cheap crackers on the table. So
those days are sadly gone. Although I have to say, in Brooklyn, not to be all trendy or anything, I just was able to stay at an apartment in Brooklyn, Park Slope. There's a big brewing movement, small micro, I mean, really tiny breweries, and sours are hot, and a dollar oysters. There's some restaurants that have, or bars, bar and restaurant. $1 local oysters all day, every day. I ate quite a number.
Sign me up.
Cool. Let's go back to Alvarado Street Bakery now. So, I mean, God, I remember you when you were just over here, not far from the station.
Right. Did we were here for 24 years in Roner Park.
Did a tour there a couple of times. I've used your bread a lot. Really great hot dog buns.
Oh, thanks
Alvarado
very much.
Street hot dog buns. So what are you making now? The same line of breads that you've made for a number of years.
In many ways, well, Scott and I are, we share a lot of ingredients. We also rely heavily on yeast and water and grains. And we do a fairly unique product in that our breads are flourless. They're made entirely with sprouted grain. We've been sprouting grain now for over three decades and making flourless breads. And for the most part, we've been one of the very few bakeries in the country that are doing that. One of the unique attributes of sprouts is that they freeze really well. And when thawed out after months, you can't tell it from a loaf we baked yesterday. So that's really what's enabled us to get into a market outside of Sonoma County by selling our breads frozen to natural food stores, supermarkets. We like to use the phrase from small marts to Walmarts. So we have grown to be a national brand and even international. We currently find ourselves to be the largest selling whole grain bread in Japan. So our bread travels out of the San Francisco Bay on a frozen container. 13 days later, we have a distributor in Tokyo who distributes our product throughout that country as well. So we've been very fortunate. We have an incredibly loyal and dedicated fan base. I've heard from countless people over the years that my parents raised you on this bread, or raised me on this bread, and now I'm raising my kids on this bread. So it's a wonderful thing. We do enjoy a really great customer. Sprouts are quite different than baking bread with flour. If you remember from our school days, if you mix flour with water, you get paste. And that's what's going on in your gut when your body is trying to digest something made with highly processed flour. Sprouts are living, breathing plants. We soak these grains in filtered water until they actually start to grow. At that point, it's no longer a hard, dormant wheat seed, but it's a living plant. We immediately drain the water and grind those sprouts into dough. So what comes out of our grinder is not flour. It's this wet mush that looks sort of like hamburger.
Yeah.
That's the ground up sprouts, and that's the basis of all of our recipes. So we sprout wheat predominantly, but we also sprout lentils, we sprout corn, we sprout rye, we sprout barley. And these various combinations of grains are how we put our recipes together. All of our products are vegetarian. We do use honey in a few recipes. The rest of them would be vegan as well. We don't use any dairy products or eggs in our facility, and we are one of the last of the peanut tree nut free facilities, which is so important to so many people who have children with, you know, life threatening allergies to nuts. So we have a very minimal ingredient list, very minimally processed ingredients, and makes for a terrific 100% whole grain bread without any flour.
Now, where are you sourcing your grains? You go through a lot. If you're making 50,000 loaves a day, you're buying a lot of grain.
We are, and one of the wonderful things about the growth of our company, it caused the growth of organic wheat farming. The more demand there was for organic wheat, which continues to this day, the more farmers that are growing organically. So because we're trying to sprout these grains, we buy directly from the organic farmers that grow them. It does not go to a mill to be processed. It comes to us straight from the farm and into our tanks for sprouting.
California, United States, I mean, what's your reach when it comes to securing your grains?
Yeah, sure. Our grain, predominantly Utah, Wyoming, Montana. There are some grain, you know, grain is dependent upon weather. And there are good years and not so good years. So there are times when we will buy organic grain from southern Canada as well.
Yeah, I know they're big producers.
Yes.
And that's a geopolitical boundary. That's not a physical boundary. So
there's not even a fence there.
Yes, it's North America. So what sort of impact would it have, say, in Japan? If, I mean, you're not going to give up the organic label if worse comes to worse, and you'll find a way to get the fluoride out of there, right?
We would. Japan has its own organic certification. Here in the in the U.S., there's the USDA. You're familiar with the green and white seal on the front that says certified organic. In Japan, it's called JAS, and it's a certification that's even more strict than the U.S. Yes, if this were an ingredient in our product, our business in Japan would no longer exist.
And so how often do you have to go through certification in Japan?
Annually.
Annually, okay. Well, good for them. You know, good for them. Let's take one more musical break here on Mouthful, and we'll be right back talking about fluoride.
When Emma Rose was 10 years old, her father passed away. She cried to think he'd never see her on her wedding day. And then her mother sickened and left her on her own, saying, Emma Rose, it grieves me to leave you so alone. I keep the candles burning. When Emma Rose was 16 years, she was courted and wed by Danny Jay, the neighbor boy, a fine young man, they said. And in the flowering of their love, Emma had a son. And Danny left one morning before the rising of the sun. How long, how long will it be till you're returning? How long, how long must I keep the candles burning? The years went by and Emma Rose grew bitter in her grief. Of all the men that came and went, none gave her any peace. And even age could not erase the beauty in her face. But Emma Rose had eyes for one who left without a trace. And tell me, how long, how long will it be till you're returning? How long must I keep the candles burning? Emma lives alone now, the child is grown and gone. Some say they see her now and then on the day she goes to town. And if you're traveling north, there's a mailbox on the road, and all it says is Emma Rose in letters faint and old. How long, how long will it be till you're returning? How long must I keep the candles burning?
It's Mouthful. That was, of course, Emma Rose by Kate Wolfe. We are talking with Scott Goyne of Hen House Brewing, Michael Gerkout of Alvarado Street Bakery, and Donna Gallagher-Stroh of Clean Water Sonoma Marin about the issue of fluoride. When does it come up for a vote?
Well, May 19th, the Board of Supervisors will hear on their agenda a presentation of the Public Health Department. We are asking everyone to be at that meeting. They can vote because it's on the agenda. I've had several of the people on the Board of Supervisors say they're not going to vote that day, but they can. When it's on the agenda, you can take action and vote.
Right.
So we're not going there. We're going to make sure we're there. You know, listening to your two guests of the food, I learned a lot. That was kind of fun, and it makes me realize a lot of the reasons why people are here in Sonoma County. Our brand is healthy, sustainable.
Absolutely.
I mean, people come here because of our brand. Why would we throw it away?
Yeah.
Over a state mandate that in 1995 that says communities of more than 10,000 customers, connections, have to fluoridate. But it's an unfunded mandate, and we don't have to do it. We've made it all this time without doing it, without getting a penalty by the state.
What about getting it changed at the state level?
That we're working on that, but for Sonoma County, none of the cities actually qualify under the state mandate. I read it very carefully. I won't go into it in detail, but what I want to make the listeners know about that's very positive that they can do something, the fact is there are 8 contractors in an agreement, in a contract with the Sonoma County Water Agency. And they, anytime there's a big project, and this project is $17 million and $600,000 a year to maintain, if any of the cities or water districts don't want it, they have to open up this restructured agreement, and they have to all agree on a big project. What we've done is gone to the Valley of the Moon Water District. They voted no on April 7th. Okay. Going backwards, we went to the Sonoma County City, and they voted no a couple months ago.
Yeah, Sonoma City?
The City of Sonoma.
City of Sonoma, okay.
And then Cotati voted about a year and a half ago. They started the lead off. Mm-hmm. Right now, we're working heavily on Petaluma and Rohnert Park, and it will be on the city council meeting on May 4th in Petaluma. And I think the mayor's going to take a lead role in this. We've met with him. He does not want it for the very reason, for the people they're sitting right here. He does not want it in the town. He wants to look out for the businesses. So we need the support on May 4th to come and support that city, to send a letter onto the Board of Supervisors saying that they don't want it. That would be four. Contractors of the eight.
What about Sebastopol? That seems like a slam dunk.
Well, Sebastopol voted, but they aren't included in the contract.
They didn't even try anyway.
No. They don't get water from the Sonoma County Water Agency.
Okay.
So, see, what you need to understand.
You need the one. Yes, got it.
Is the Sonoma County Water Agency does not want to put it in. It's the Board of Supervisors is the board of the Board of Supervisors. So whatever they tell them to do, they have to do it. They don't even want to do it. So, really, if I was one of the supervisors, I would not want to use up all of my political capital on one issue and piss off all my cities.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. But we're going to need to get more of the cities on so we make it that obvious.
So it looks like you're getting four.
Yep.
And then it would be what, Windsor?
Windsor, I'm working on Santa Rosa and Rohnert Park right now. Okay. Most of the city council persons in Rohnert Park, I believe, do not want to do it. And the manager, Darren Jenkins, he's wonderful. I sit with him on the groundwater. He's an engineer. He does not want to put fluoride in 29 wells. How expensive it would be for Rohnert Park. Yeah. It's not just what you think. It's anyway, so I hope we can keep our brand and not do this. You know, we also got a trust it from the Take It From The Tap program several years ago that the Sonoma County Water Agency did to get everyone to trust the water that comes out of the tap. We'd be throwing that one out, too.
Yeah, no kidding. I forgot what I was going to say. Rohnert Park, Windsor, Santa Rosa. We'll move on to something else. Oh, I know.
Windsor only gets 15%. Windsor gets 15% of its water from Sonoma, from the water agency. That's why we're going to them last. We're going to the cities that get the bulk of their water from the water agency first.
What is the health department's position? What do they say? How do they counter what you say?
They actually mostly just ignore the fact that in every one of their fluoride advisory committee meetings for a year, there was 20 to 30 people that don't want fluoride in the room. Mm-hmm. In a year, it was like that, and only one person that entire time wanted fluoride in the audience. It's really stunning how much we're not getting listened to. I'm not kidding. To the point that we've had to file 5 Sonoma County grand jury investigations on our own public health department. One, for that they're not hearing. They're not looking at the ill health effects. Now, you have a public agency who's headed up by a doctor, and that is medical negligence. I looked that up. Mm-hmm. That's medical negligence to not look at the ill effects of fluoridation. And they're going to be look at them. So I think our Board of Supervisors should be making them do that. And they're not.
And they're not. And they just, like, ignore you. They don't respond.
Yeah.
Has anything come out of the grand jury?
Yes, they did say that they had to give equal time. They did do a report that says they have to give equal time to the anti-side and the pro-side, and no one has done that yet. And they're looking into the cost right now.
The cost?
I was interviewed by the... I know they're looking into the cost because...
Oh, the cost. Yeah, $17.5 million a year?
$17 million, and it's not even a true cost.
Okay.
The engineering report says approximately $17 million. Now, I was a city council person. I know that a municipal project starts out that high. By the time you put it in, it's going to be 30. It's a twice. Mm-hmm. It'll be twice the cost. We are doing something great in Sonoma County, our public health department. They have 4 pillars of oral health. Those 4 pillars are giving greater access, putting in more chairs in some of the public health clinics. They've got a mobile unit that goes out and finds the kids that really need help that can't afford it. They're already doing some really great things that with a little bit of enhanced funding, we'd be there.
Yeah.
It wouldn't even need $17 million. But the reason why they don't go that way is because that money will probably come from the American Dental Association Foundation and the California Dental Association Foundation and First 5 monies. These are 3 groups that get donations from the Alcoa and the phosphate fertilizer industry to keep this is a cheap way to get rid of that toxin.
Right.
You see, it's a lot cheaper than to just give a couple millions of dollars here. They've saved hundreds of billions over 70 years.
What's the responsible way to get rid of this byproduct? Fluoride.
Well, it's
do we know?
It's very expensive and probably it involves Nevada. I'm so sorry about Nevada. Anyway, no, it probably has to be stored
okay.
or processed and in canisters and buried or something.
Wow.
It's expensive to do it the right way.
God, there's so much that is so expensive.
It's so grim. I lost a lot of sleep studying this stuff.
Yeah.
I really did. It's sad. Yeah. It's man's inhumanity to man. Something like this gone all these years. See, it hurts developing. It crosses the placental barrier in a pregnant mother. It goes into the developing brain of a child, and I have cried over this. What parent in their right mind would trade the developing brain of a child for a myth about tooth decay? Oh. See, people just don't know that it really is that serious, and it causes ADHD also.
Are there other things, other, not ailments, other conditions connected to it?
It binds to the bone in the body. Fluoride will bind to your own bones. Skeletal fluorosis is a known cause of drinking fluoride every day.
And what is that? How does that manifest?
Makes your bones weaker. It makes them appear more dense in an x-ray, so they get away with, the public health department says, oh, it makes your bones stronger. No, it makes your bones like chalk.
Oh.
So what happens when you drop a piece of chalk on the ground?
Yeah.
Okay, so it makes your bones weaker, but look like they're denser. It's not.
I would think that the Board of Supervisors would respond to the very real damage to our Sonoma County brand equity that this would cause.
Need you there that day. Bring that up. They'll only give each person 3 minutes.
Mm. They'll give 3 minutes to people?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's on the agenda now. They'll give people 2 to 3 minutes. So the businesses need to be there. They need to come if they can come. And I don't know the time yet on the agenda because you don't ever know until about 2 weeks out. Yeah. Of the time, but I know the date is May 19th. That's that's for certain. But the businesses need to come and say, you're kidding me, right? We have a healthy brand.
Now, how many businesses are... is it a petition that you have?
Yeah, we have a petition, and then we only just started this not that long ago, and it's quite a few. Here's a list. I haven't counted it. It's probably about 80.
About 80 businesses?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
You can look at it if you like.
Can I reach it? I've reached it. And I would think that... okay, yeah, Native Kitchen, Muscardini Cellars, Moonlight Brewing Company, of course, Third Street Ale Works.
Latratia Factory just signed. I don't know if it's on that list you have in your hand.
Ludwig Farm. Ludwig Farm is such a great little farm. I love that place. Blue Beagle Coffee, Green String Farm, of course. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is great. So... getting a spokesman who could come in and say...
We're going to keep getting more and more as we approach the May 19th day.
But who can talk about the Sonoma County brand.
Yeah.
You know, I can't do that, or I would be there in a heartbeat. Right. I mean, I write for the Press Democrat. You know, don't really take public positions at the Board of Supervisors. But there are plenty of people out there, somebody who's able to talk about that. I mean... Every food writer in America right now wishes they lived, or just about everyone wishes they lived in Sonoma County.
I'll bet.
Wine writers, you know, so many of them want to be in Sonoma County. It actually happened later than I thought it was going to happen. You know, my first book on Sonoma County was published in 1990. My second one was published in 2000, and both were ahead of the curve. But now, you know, the wave has splashed. You know, people want to be here. It would be just suicide. To do something. Well, we only have a few. We've got about 7 minutes left, so we've got some time. Alvarado Street Bread is really easy to find. I know. I see it in all the markets I shop at.
We are. We're very fortunate here in the Bay Area that we are in most of the markets.
Mm-hmm.
Costco, Trader Joe's, Safeway, Oliver's, and
Oliver's, Furcrest, Pacific, and Fiesta. You know, I'm always encouraging people. Especially if you are in Sonoma County, shop first at your farmer's market or farmer stand. That's in the center. Next is your locally owned markets. So at that point, because we have such an amazing abundance here, you don't really have to go out beyond that. Mm-hmm. So your market closest to home is where you can find Alvarado Street Bread. It's not quite as easy to get Hen House beers, but let's start. Where in Sebastopol, say?
We're often on tap at the Hop Monk.
Okay.
And other locations. We do have this neat little link on our website that shows, it's a Google map that shows all the places that we're on tap. And I'm just realizing that I can't just list off places. It's illegal for the Tide House laws.
Really?
It's crazy. I had to give a comprehensive list of an area.
Okay.
But we do have a link. I would like to say that my life path was influenced dramatically by Alvarado Street Bakery Bread. 30 years ago, when I was a 10-year-old kid, my best friend's quirky hippie mother used to have Alvarado Street Bakery Bread in the freezer and Nancy's yogurt in the refrigerator, and we would do these crazy things like make smoothies and eat this amazing bread. And those experiences really fostered a sense where I questioned things, and I questioned the food, and that's how I became interested in alternative medicine and studied herbology and nutrition, and health begins with what you eat. And so I'm honored to sit next to you. Thank you so much for what you do.
You bet. Thank you.
Wow. So now I didn't know you could freeze it. I'm glad I know that. And now I know to ask by name either. For Hen House. So, hey, yeah. So can I just give a shout out and tell everyone that's listening, whatever city you're in, I really believe in supporting your politicians and doing the right thing, and I believe they can do so if they hear from you, and it does make a difference. A call, a letter, everything makes a difference. Whatever city you're in, tell your city council to send a letter off to the Board of Supervisors. Tell them you don't want it. It's not for us. We're in a severe drought. That we don't have enough water. We shouldn't be messing with it. So it's just that simple. So if we told you too much science, forget it. You don't need the science. It costs too much. It's not the right thing to do in the middle of a drought. That's it. There's your simple letter. Thank you.
What if somebody wants to get more involved? Do you work with volunteers?
Oh, yes. They get my number, my phone number, and I give it out all the time, is 707-547-7006. Believe
just
me,
a second,
call me. I'll put you to work.
Wait a second. We have to say that number again. 707-547-7006.
And our website is cleanwatersonomamarin.org. We also have a Facebook page, and we're hoping to, with your permission, to put this tape,
absolutely,
a link to the podcast,
you will
so
have,
that people can listen to
you
this
can put
again.
The podcast up. Absolutely. Should be ready by Monday or Tuesday as a podcast. You can put it up on any of your websites.
And we'll be at Cinco de Mayo. We have a booth at Cinco de Mayo.
Oh, great.
So we'll be there, and we're everywhere. And we're at Earth Day.
And what about contacting you by email? Do you have an email address?
Yeah. My email is dawnagal. That's Donna Gal. @bigplanet.com.
Bigplanet.com. And on that note, thank you very much to my guests. It's really been a very lively hour. It has flown by, and I understand so much more than I did. So thank you all very much. And I'm going to go out and get myself a loaf of Alvarado Street bread this evening on the way home. Next week, we are going to take a look at wool, sheep, goats, and the upcoming Wool Festival taking place in mid-May. I don't know if we're going to have any live animals in the studio like we did a couple of times when we've done gut shows. It was one of the funniest nights on Mouthful ever. I'll tell you about it sometime. Anyway, that is coming up next Sunday, May 3rd. In the meantime, you can send me email at catsmilk@sonic.net. Facebook. Mouthful has a Facebook page. Just type in Mouthful in the search bar and you'll get there. And so meet me back here for another yummy episode of Mouthful Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming here on KRCB.
Trumpet vine grew in the kitchen window and bloomed bright orange on the wall. You sat in the morning light holding a guitar as the first summer rain began to fall. Like the gentle raindrops, your words fell in. making things so clear as we quietly sat there. It reminded me of other times you had come before and brought a song or just walked in through the kitchen door.